welcome to the Sprocket Podcast.
Hello.
Where we are simplifying the good life. Oh, snap. I just took your thunder.
Well, what's your name?
My name is Aaron Flores.
Yeah, we're coming to you from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia. My name is Brock Dittus.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Yeah, and we cover generally bicycling, transit, and trains, and simpler living. And today we have two longtime Portland bike scene legends with us, so we're going to talk about their lives. So
we've had a number of legends.
Yes.
These past couple weeks here.
Yeah, that's why we do what we do.
We got some established legends, and maybe some legends in the making.
Yeah, to get to hang out with the cool people before they're so cool that we can't.
Right.
Hang out with them any longer.
And it's nice to hang out with the cool people who are not as cool anymore.
Now I know where I fall. It's good to have that straight at the beginning of the show.
I was curious where you're going with that. Yeah, Timo Forsberg. And Esther, which conjugation of your names do you prefer?
Esther Harlow's
fine. Esther Harlow, yes. The two of you come as a pair. You're right here.
Here we are.
We got the whole set. So thank you for coming in and joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we're very excited to be here.
Trying to remember the last time that I saw you guys in person on Saturday. We had you on the show as part of Honky Tonk Prison, which was right towards the beginning of Aaron's tenure as host.
One of the many where I just could not get off work.
We missed you. It was an on location.
I missed being there.
Yeah.
We went to your house and did a kind of I just used the iPhone, I think, to record it. So it turned out well for what it was. But it was an honor to be there. And
Aww.
It was a lot of fun. And I got to play, it's a bass uke, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so Timo's bass uke is very nice.
Bass ukulele.
U-bass.
How does that work?
It's the size of a tenor uke, but it's...
It's strung.
Strung with strings that are basically the size of soda straws.
Yeah.
They're just super thick.
Oh, wow.
Catgut.
So do you just tune it like an octave lower than a regular uke? Or?
It's DGBE, I think, and a regular uke is GCEA.
Okay.
So, yeah.
We have the technical help here. I don't know.
It's the same as a regular bass, isn't it?
It is.
DGBE.
I played tenor uke for a while.
Yeah.
And then there's baritone uke.
Right.
I never...
Which is also DGBE.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is not really a uke. It's just a bass that's pretending to be a uke.
I see.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. I enjoyed playing it. And I've always been looking for a smaller bass instrument that you could take along and play.
It's very handy that way. It's very portable.
Your average, like an oboe, you don't take that bike camping.
You still have to have an amp for the bass uke, so it's not acoustic.
Okay.
So although some people can get a lot of sound out of it.
I mean, you can play it acoustically if nothing else is making any sound in the room, especially not other ukuleles.
Yeah. It's
like, if there are any ukuleles involved, then you are like drowned out completely.
Technically, everything is an acoustic instrument, right?
Yeah. I mean, you could hit it with like a hammer a few times
right.
and you would hear a sound.
You can make acoustic music without instruments at all, really. Like you just start
throwing things
on the floor and sound comes out of that action. So,
well, many people have played bicycles as instruments.
That's right. Have you guys heard that, what was it, like Johnny Random, I think, is the name of the artist, and Bespoken was the name of the track. That was in the Bike Portland News Roundup, I would say a year ago or something like that. And that's an amazing song.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember if... Well, you know what? As I'm talking about it, maybe I'll pull it up. And we don't have permission from this guy, so this will just be a sampler. And we're talking about this for educational reasons because some people might be wondering, how is it
Who is that guy that plays the bicycle?
Go about making music with a bicycle? And, you know, to that end, I want to make sure that we do our part to educate the people.
Yeah, people need to know.
Yes. So
here at the Sprocket Podcast, we are all about education.
That's right.
And people. You guys talk about that all day long.
I kind of feel like I should actually get a degree from listening to the show.
Oh, we forgot to send you your diploma? I'm sorry.
I'm still waiting. I sent in all the box tops I could collect. It's hard to get a box top off of a sprocket.
We'll get our diploma department on that.
All right. Now, so while Brock is doing the technical end of this, I will point out that there's actually a long line of people playing bicycles as an instrument.
How long has this been the case? Like, how many people have done this?
Like,
do we know?
Since the bicycle has been a thing?
I'm guessing the answer would be yes, but the documented cases I know of, well, the most recent that we will be listening to shortly, the earliest that I know of was Frank Zappa actually playing a bicycle, I believe, on the Tonight Show.
Oh, really?
Wow.
And then in between, at the first Multnomah County Bike Fair, there was I'm going to get their name wrong, but it was something like the Portland Bike Ensemble.
Okay.
And they had a series of bikes that they had set up with amplification, and they just played them.
Wow. Yeah. That's kind of cool.
It was perfect for the event.
Yeah. Who else has done this?
Now you've got
me. Oh, it's all good.
I listed the three I knew.
That's actually that's a much better list than I would have come up with, so I appreciate that. Tell you what, here is this I think we can play with impunity because this is the preview that's posted on the internet. So as soon as it comes up, we'll hear something about it and from it.
When I was a little kid, I used to attach cards onto my bike to hear the sound of the spokes. I thought to myself, what if I could tune my spokes to make a melody? Years later, that's exactly what I'm doing. This music has no traditional instrumentation, synthesizers, samplers, or drum machines.
Wait, does it have a drum machine?
No, it's actually, that's the sounds of the little psh sound. That's like air coming out of the valve.
Oh, what's the...
Did he use samplers?
How does he get that?
I would imagine that there might be some... There might be some, like, bending of the sound. He may be, you know...
Auto-tune?
Possibly. He may be auto-tuning his bicycle.
Isn't that kind of a contradiction in terms?
I know mine gradually untunes itself over time.
There is, however,
it tunes down for what?
Oh. Yes.
Oh.
Drop G.
There you go.
I'm sorry. I've been living with Timo too long.
There's a number of wheel builders that use the tune of the spokes to know how much or when is the right tension.
Right,
They have finger picks on their fingers. Oh. And as they're tensioning with one hand, they're kind of plucking with the other.
Well, this is kind of like the concept of tuning a guitar or any other stringed instrument.
Yeah.
I don't mean to narrow it to guitar-based music, but the idea that, the tension does determine the tone and the pitch. So I suppose you could use pitch. I was always wondering if that was a real thing, because I think I saw that in a movie somewhere.
The Triplets of Belleville.
Yeah?
So it must be real, because it was shown there.
There you would think.
In a cartoon.
Right, because the grandmother was tuning the wheel for the bike racer kid.
Okay.
And using the little...
Now, my housemate mentioned, and, this will probably come back to me, bite me in the ass, but my housemate mentioned, he was at Sugar Wheelworks and knows the person there, and they were doing the...
Ooh. Oh, yes.
Jude or one of her underlings?
I think it was one of her underlings, but he knows Jude, yeah.
I think they refer to them as sidemen.
side people.
If they're, tuning their...
I was going to ask how many underlings she has, but yeah, we'll have to have Jude on sometime and find out.
Yeah, and then she can tell me that was patently false.
Yes. Well, hey, can I mention just a couple things that I thought were cool about last week?
Sure.
Number one,
meeting John from Maine.
Yes, I met John from Maine. Yeah,
the John from Maine,
the very one.
Did you meet his brother Tom?
I did not.
This is a reference to something I'm not getting.
He makes some toothpaste. And the deodorant that
Tom's
he makes, I don't really care for.
Yes,
but this is John, not Tom. John makes cargo bikes. I think it's Woodside Cargo Bikes. And he and his wife were in town. I believe they were just here kind of for a vacation weekend. But they were here to meet some old friends and watch some sports and that sort of thing, I think. So... Is there a fly in here?
There is.
I thought she was just applauding someone coming to Portland.
I don't believe this fly.
Sports.
Worst. Yes, sports. So anyways, I met up with them and chatted. It was great. So now he has a couple of podcast stickers. And what's the other? Ride Your Bike Spoke Card, which I ended up having an extra one.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome.
Yeah. So there was that. Before that, I've been riding with the rain cape. I just gave you the rain cape, and I didn't store it very well, so it kind of smells like
kind of stinky.
Yeah, sorry about that. But
somebody would maybe like to write in with some hints as to how to unstinkify it.
You know, once you say that, Drew is going to say, well, here is how I de-stinkify my cape. And I will welcome his advice because Drew is a smart man.
Or he would just tell us how to unstinkify it without having listened to this episode.
That's very possible.
That's how he operates.
He might be crafting that email as we are crafting this podcast.
Now, is there a real reason to unstinkify it? Because once you put it on and you start riding, all the smell is behind you. You're constantly getting ahead of it.
You're still wearing it, though. I'm imagining the stink is going to get on me.
But the great thing about the cape is that the wind flows through.
Sort of.
I actually have the same cape.
Okay.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a rain cape heavy month.
How does your cape smell? About my... I couldn't even ask that with a straight face.
You should ask me.
Yeah, how does his cape smell?
My cape's got no nose.
All right.
How does it smell?
That's a good question.
Terrible.
Esther, hi-yo. How does his cape smell?
I have taken great pains not to smell it, so I don't know.
It's really hard to say. Okay. Anyways, I've been using that, and I rode that through perhaps some of the hardest rain of the season so far. It was Wednesday, and I was on my way out to TriMet because our good friend Diane, whom we've had on the show before, was throwing a little party to...
Was it Transit on Tap?
No, it was not. Okay. There is a Transit on Tap coming up, which everyone should check out. We recommend you... Here's your call to action. Go to Transit
on Tap.
Which
we can do, damn it all.
That's right, because we don't have anybody looking over our shoulder. So the idea is I went out to see this new Max Rail car, and... I taped some audio. I might release a short little thing for you guys. Yes, there's a picture out there on the screen of me sitting in the cab of this Type 5 Max.
Ooh, you really are a person of legend.
You guys can see this from across the room.
I can see it on the big screen over there.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. And,
you look like you're about ready to go to space.
I was.
And are you wearing the cape in that?
Yes.
Yes, actually, because we were required to wear something of high visibility reflection because we're in a rail yard.
And a Caradise cape, it definitely qualifies.
Right. Mm-hmm. I got there. And Diane said, well, you're already wearing something neon, so come on in. So then I stood around in a cape while I was interviewing these guys.
So you were kind of like a super visible superhero.
I was.
I always say that Timo looks like Pac-Man when he's wearing his.
Although if you put on the spats, you look like Big Bird.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, Drew mentioned the spats. Are they like a matching set? Do they go with the, with the cape?
Okay. Go with finger quotes.
Okay, so they are a matching set.
Yeah.
Wait, so they're sold together?
No, well,
no,
I mean
they are not sold together.
Sold
but
separately.
Sold separately. Ah, yes.
But they are intended
thank
for
you,
use
Hasbro.
Together. Yeah,
yeah. So I did that, but the cape actually kept me very dry. I believe from my workplace, I took the afternoon off of work so I could go and see this new Max train because I am a train nerd like that, and I rode along Marine Drive out to Gresham where the rail yard is, their garage. And it was it wasn't like the hardest rain of the day, but it was very steady, consistent rain all the way out there. About an hour 15 I rode and had the cape on. And I was relatively dry. I think most of the moisture at the end of the ride was from my perspiration.
Ah.
But it was a pretty good setup. And
there must have been less of that because it has the flow through...
Right.
Air capability.
Right. And so the experiment, again, this is rain cape month. It's October. So the experiment is as...
Is that official? Did that come like from PDOT or something?
Is there a proclamation signed by Steve Novick?
I think at this point there is. The idea is that, Aaron, you're going to take this cape and try
I'm
it out.
I'm doing it.
Because there's a little more rain projected. And
maybe
I'm going to go back...
after I like baking soda it or something.
Yeah, yeah. Be careful with the waterproofing, whatever you do with it.
But I have to ask you a question. Did they teach you how to do... anything on the Max? Like, was this a trainer experience?
This was exactly like there was a contest. I think it was like
you know, it like Space Camp for TriMet or something?
Not really. There was a contest back for the Riders Club. For anyone who likes TriMet, they gave away like you know, learn to drive a Max train, and you got like 15 minutes with a trainer to sit down and like
really?
take it along their practice track and everything. So this was not that.
Okay.
But this is a very much like – this was just kind of a preview for the press sort of deal. When I worked at Oregon Armored Service, back when that was a company that existed here, they were an armored car company. Occasionally I would go along with a guy who made coin runs down to the U.S. Bank Tower. And I think they required everyone that went in there to have a gun for security reasons. And so the guy hands me a pistol. He's like, here, put this on. I said, what do I do with it? He said, don't shoot anybody. So it was kind of like that.
Isn't that exactly what the purpose of those things are? That's what those are made to do.
Well, I think that day the purpose of that gun was to get me legally into the building.
Right.
Or at least policy-wise. So what happened with the TriMet train was I sat down there and I said, is it okay if I put my hand on the you're like, you know, accelerator? And Diane said, yes, don't drive it. Don't move it. And so I did not. But the caption I think I put on the internet was, you know, mistake. They put me in the right. pilot seat and I'm never getting out.
So. Have you ever considered a career at TriMet? Because you can move up to the max operator pretty quickly.
I have considered it. I don't know. I really like my time off.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest reason I'm still a school bus driver, because I've actually applied to TriMet twice. Mm-hmm. And both times I decided to not go through with the hiring process because I didn't
reasons.
Well, yeah, it's like if you start, and there are many great things about being a TriMet operator. See our episodes with Dan Christensen. But I would say that
episodes.
You even had
plural.
Big Al on here to talk about how great TriMet is.
We haven't had Big Al, but I have a sneaking suspicion he wouldn't tell us how great TriMet was. I think that's a secret he's keeping to himself.
Wait, he's your palster, though.
He is, according to Twitter. I think, is that his Twitter handle?
Yeah.
Yes. What is it? Is it? Yeah. So anyways, yes, that's Al Margulis, who is a former operator and current union advocate and outspoken critic of TriMet. But I think the reason that I don't work for them is because you have to spend like, you know, 5 or 6 Christmases working on the holidays. And if you like spending time with your family on those special days, then it gets trickier. Mm. And I do. So I didn't.
I thought you were going to say you're still a school bus driver because it's all about the kids.
Because it's a very fulfilling
and
experience.
Young
and it is. No, it really is. I like my job. And I firmly believe that people who don't like kids probably shouldn't.
Sorry.
It's never going to go away.
Kids! Hooray.
That's right. A slow clap.
Let's have a round of applause for the kids.
Show of applause if you like kids. Yeah. Everybody on the internet.
Exactly. Just one last word from me is that the Transportastic Studio opener was on Saturday, and all of us in this room were there, and that was a good time. So we just posted
truly.
The episode right before yep. this was what we did that night.
Did that include audio postcards or not?
The audio postcards will be included later. Right. That was just the live transportation radio that we did with hot swappable hosts.
Ooh. Hey.
As in, we didn't tell anybody that they were going
to
be on beforehand.
You don't have to unplug anything in order to get them plugged in, right?
It's like clutchless shifting.
Wow, I didn't know it was that kind of party. I think you left too early.
I heard there was a hot swap meet in Greece.
See? You guys left too early.
So, Aaron, you have some notes on your week.
I do have some notes on my week. First off, I'm not on drugs anymore.
Hooray.
So that's
good.
Don't
do drugs, kids.
Don't do drugs unless they're prescribed. And even still, be skeptical. I just decided I'm not going to take them. I keep forgetting, for one.
Oh.
So, you know, forgetting at the allotted time is not terrible. These aren't like terribly time sensitive
right.
meds. But like, for example, I forgot this morning and then I went out of the house. And so I'm nowhere near my drugs.
Ah.
So.
And these are pain medications.
Yeah, it's all pain meds. And I've been doing fine without them. So
not like antipsychotics.
No.
Good.
No.
There's nothing wrong with taking antipsychotics.
No. Especially if you need them.
But,
just saying, Aaron doesn't.
I'm not
as big of a deal if you don't.
Yeah, this got kind of strange.
It's like Garden State.
Thank you. But anyhow, I'm not on drugs. I don't feel terrible.
Do you feel that Brock is violating your HIPAA confidentiality right now? Because we can change
I think I'm violating my own HIPAA confidentiality.
You know what I find, though, is in Portland, I believe the confidentiality is HIPAA than in other places.
See what you did there.
HIPAA. Yes.
well, this is one of those things that we could edit out if needed.
This will be a very short podcast episode.
You bumped into some friends
and
of
then
ours.
Lastly, just like maybe an hour before I got here, ran into Greg and Sarah from Fun Employment Radio.
Yeah.
We were all three at the Goodwill searching for our perfect Halloween costumes.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Macho Man Randy Savage was mentioned, but I'm unclear as to which one of them was dressing up as such.
Nice. Excellent. And if anybody's been keeping up with them, they do an excellent show over at funemploymentradio.com. And Greg Nibbler just had the ghost investigation of his house.
Oh, he did?
Which
I need to listen. No, yeah. No, don't tell me.
That sounds way more exciting than a radon test.
It's similar but different. The trick is that you can put your headphones on, Aaron, because it's
you're not
going
to tell me the results.
They didn't tell us. You have to go to their listener party to find out.
Oh.
And that's coming up in early November. So if you're in the Portland area and you like radio-related things, these guys make a great show. And they're having a special event.
All right.
So, yeah, anyways, funemploymentradio.com. And that's not a paid plug. We said that because we like them.
As opposed to all the other products or companies that we've mentioned.
That's right.
I only mentioned this beer I'm drinking because I really like it.
It's true.
Well, I'll just crack mine open here.
Oh, yeah. That's right. All of ours
Henry
are already Reinhardt's
open.
Brock seamlessly transitioned to a second beer. I was looking like, am I too early to start on a cider?
Oh, did I?
And, yeah.
I didn't even notice
smooth.
That.
you just opened your second one, didn't you?
Actually, I just opened her second
just
one.
Opened
her. There
somehow.
We go.
I don't know how she got the first one open.
Should we do a...
Another man came and opened her cider.
That sounds dangerous.
That sounded way dirtier than I intended.
Can we edit that part out?
I apologize, yes.
So let's talk about you guys because that's why you're here.
Thanks.
Well,
it all started in 1960. It was a hot August day.
Neil Diamond was playing in the background. You guys referenced that there's some story that's cute about how you guys met.
Shall I?
Please.
They look longingly into each other's eyes.
Well, some people may remember that I actually served breakfast on the bridge for a while. I haven't done it for many years. I consider myself a barista emeritus.
Yeah, this is the thing in Portland where once a month somebody brings out a bunch of supplies and there's coffee and pastries and that sort of thing.
Many
breakfast
people,
items. Yeah.
Yes. Actually, we now have three bridges covered.
That's right.
And I say we, you know, attaching myself to all the people who are doing the hard work of actually getting up early, brewing coffee.
I often consume breakfast on those bridges.
And how do you enjoy it?
I enjoy it very much.
Which bridge do you go to?
Last time I was at Hawthorne, but honestly, like the Steel Bridge is kind of my darling.
And have you checked out Burnside? Because they bring delicious donuts.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of the Burnside Bridge being a location because that bridge has gotten a lot nicer.
It has, and having breakfast there really makes it a lot nicer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Nice. And so you guys met doing that?
Well, I used to haunt the Broadway Bridge, and Esther would ride across. And you know, as with many people who rode across the bridge and stopped for a cup of coffee, we would chat. And, you know, that was really a highlight of my month is I got to chat with a lot of people who were riding bikes and they would tell me about the party they were throwing or the latest thing that they'd seen or about their Caradise Cape. You know, it was like a great way to have just like a – just check in with your bike peep. Bike peeps.
Yes.
Or Garrison Keillor would say your bike peeps.
Nice.
And nice sibilant.
Esther would ride across every month and she would chat with me and she was always very nice and I could never really understand it. Why she was being so nice.
I think because oftentimes we were the only people there because it was after 9 o'clock.
So you had to be nice to her.
Because I was being nice enough to stay after 8, 9.
Yeah,
actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I never wanted to get off. And of course, you know, originally Breakfast on the Bridge was seen as kind of a way to encourage or thank people for riding their bike. And you know.
And you pioneered the use of meeting women.
Breakfast on the Bridges has many uses.
And now it's just a meat market over there. Techno music playing, people grinding on each other.
Kind of a hot swap meat market.
And that's a problem for the vegans.
Oh, we've got, you know, fake hot swap meat.
Okay, that's
right.
Great.
That's right. We got Garden Burger.
It's a tempeh market.
But we did the job too well. I mean, it got so popular biking across the Broadway that we actually couldn't fit Breakfast on the Bridge on the Broadway anymore. So we had
It's narrow.
I was wondering, like, where that was going because I've never known it to be on the Broadway Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was – well, I mean, you know, the Broadway Bridge actually, if you don't have a lot of traffic, is not so narrow because you've got, like, you know, enough space for two bikes to pass probably or at least a bike and a pedestrian. And then you've got the little girder areas that you can dip into. And so, you know, I would – encourage people as they got their coffee to just dip into a girder area. And then it kind of made it like there were little salons, you know. It's mm-hmm. like
little alcoves.
Exactly.
A breakfast nook.
Right, but not
although
everybody.
You were closer to the cars and they were kind of whooshing by, and if it was raining, kind of spraying water on you.
Well, there's so. That. Yeah. So it had a few different reasons, but it had the best view.
I mean, okay.
Yeah. It had a great view of the Fremont Bridge.
Tillicum's going to be pretty great.
Tillicum Crossing is going to be awesome.
Oh, there will be breakfast on that bridge. I never thought about that.
We have a promise already from actually one of the servers on the Burnside Bridge has already claimed it.
This is a good idea.
Yeah.
It's like people calling dibs on the bridges.
Yeah. He's – well, Paul.
Yeah.
Paul Z, he's let his breakfast serving partner, Lance P, know that, you know, they are going to be parting
breaking
ways.
Up.
Yeah.
That's a shame because they do it well.
They do. I mean, I had Eggs Benedict on the bridge.
Oh, man.
Actually, I guess it was Eggs Florentine.
Okay.
On the bridge.
Either one is good.
That was really good.
You had me at eggs.
And I'm guessing this probably is too late because the next breakfast on the bridge is actually this Friday, and it's a very special breakfast on the bridge.
Okay.
It's superhero breakfast on the bridge.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's Halloween.
They've done superhero theme before.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Every Halloween we do. Okay. Or closest breakfast on the bridge to Halloween. And so the idea is that if you wear a costume, you get a breakfast on the bridge superhero trading card.
Very nice.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, this seems like a good idea. Yeah. So you two became acquainted through this.
We did.
Excellent. And you've been together for a while now, but you recently got married. And your wedding was semi-bikey, right?
It was bikey.
Yeah. We thought it was pretty bikey.
Yeah. We got some people on bikes that don't bike, and we had a bike trip to and from our wedding, which was 70 miles away. We biked down there, and we had a great posse of friends join us for the trip down and the trip back home.
Silver Falls State Park?
Yep.
Just outside of Salem? Which
yep.
Aaron, you and I have done that ride a couple times.
Yeah, it's a good ride. Times. It's all right.
Yeah.
Do you
I
go
remember
the
first time I had a camelback. Never again.
Never again.
Oh, really?
Actually, yeah. Oh, no. Huh. I don't
it's
want
my
anything.
Standby.
I don't want anything on my back.
Oh, because of the heat factor.
Yeah.
Yeah, the climb. That sun always beats down on you because it's afternoon when you leave Silverton.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's the toughest part because it's actually it's a very beautiful ride out across the plains. But the part outside of Silverton between that and the falls area, to have waterfalls, you have to have hills, I guess. And so,
that was my first like long ride.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a good one to accomplish because once you get to the top, you're like ready to be at the top.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a multi-day affair, right? It was
4 days, Thursday through Sunday.
That's
so
awesome.
Thursday and Sunday were the bike rides, and we had people, you know, coming from out of the country and from around the country. So people were arriving on Thursday and Friday, and a few people came Saturday. And the actual wedding was Saturday, and Thursday we had a big karaoke party with a couple of kegs, and our friends were KJing, so, you know, it was all people we knew doing fun songs. So it was the best karaoke I've ever been to.
It was really good. In fact, the karaoke slips were in Esperanto.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it was a little bit of a challenge to get your song in, but once you figured it out, then everything was good.
Well, it was the most even-handed way.
The beauty of Esperanto, right, is that anybody can understand it.
There you go.
Or everyone is equally mystified.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That was its design, anyway.
Yeah.
My mom really enjoyed that.
She did.
And so where are you guys – you had that, and then you went to Europe as well for – was this directly after the wedding or was this –
No, it was almost
was
a
recent.
Year later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in June.
Okay.
We didn't want to rush into the honeymoon.
Well, yeah. That's a big commitment.
Yeah. It's like you don't want to rush into the wedding. You don't want to rush into the honeymoon.
Seriously.
There you go.
Where did you guys go in Europe?
We flew into Barcelona and traveled by bike, bus, and train along the Mediterranean coast through Spain on the Costa Brava and through France on the Côte Vermeille and Marseille and then via ferry to the island of Corsica and then via ferry to Rome.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then we came home from Rome.
So kind of a northern Mediterranean coastal adventure.
Yep. Yes.
Yep, multimodal, fully.
Yeah, and by multimodal, how many modes were involved in this? Obviously, you had to get there by plane, I'm assuming, unless you took a charter cruiser or something, a ship.
Bus. We were going to – there's two trams in Barcelona, so and Timo's doing some tram promotion for PBOT and
the for the Portland aerial tram.
Yes, okay, so this is an aerial tram?
There's two different trams. Okay. Yeah, they're both aerial trams. Okay, and we did take a funicular, which is sort of like a max that goes up a hill. But we didn't take the trams because they were kind of spendy, actually. And we're like, we looked at them and we're like, eh, the Portland tram is better and cheaper.
Okay.
You know, but if I had known that we were going to be telling the story on air, I would have spent the money just so we could have counted one more.
Oh, sure.
Mode. Yeah, yeah.
You know, the
yeah.
$60 or, you know, 20
yeah.
euros each.
So, worth, yeah.
So you had your bikes with you?
We had Bromptons.
Oh, okay. Yep. So that made it much easier to, like, cart it onto things. And
yeah. yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And do you see Bromptons as the premier folding bike? I know there are a lot of kinds out there these days.
For urban and interurban, you know, we didn't really do any days longer than like 35 miles.
Okay.
So it would be nice to go back and do some, like, you know, standard bike touring kind of 50-60 mile day bike rides. And these were really more urban utility vehicles. And that was great, getting to go to all these different sized cities and just having a bike when you get there. And a lot of the cities had bike share, but like in Barcelona, you can't use it as a tourist. Only residents can use it. So it was, yeah, it's very oriented towards the people who live there. And they have this great bikeway network in Barcelona now. And even some of the smaller cities we went to, like Perpignan and Uzès and Marseille, had all these signed bike routes that have obviously come out in the last few years. So it was great showing up in all these different cities and being able to bike around and use their bikeway networks.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
It was pretty fun.
So it was less about, like, getting to and from on your bike, like from one city to another city, more about, like, getting around on your bike whilst in
exactly. Because we were, you know, we were fairly ambitious in terms of getting from Barcelona to Rome. You know, that's a fair amount of territory coverage. And we had 3 weeks. The stick in the gears, or the fly in the ointment, or the thing in the other thing that makes a metaphor.
The fly in the podcasting studio.
That's the one.
Flies!
Was the fact that when we got to the border of France, there was a train strike.
Oh, yeah.
And trains, we found, are pretty much the way you want to go through France, because apparently their bus system has been sort of decimated. The regional – I mean, there's like local bus service, but anything to get from
– like from one city to another. Mm-hmm.
From A to B, where B is a lot farther than, you know, A1.
That's fascinating. So we're talking about, like – because in the United States, it's kind of the polar opposite, where the bus and motor coach carriers are extremely well-run and pretty efficient and cheap and a great way to get around. Just because of that, Amtrak suffers from not enough funding and not enough popularity, and the schedules aren't that great all the time. So so in France, it's the opposite. There are no intercity buses.
Right. Hmm. Well, I think they're few and far between and very expensive. And yeah, it was funny. We got on this train that was supposed to go to Cerbère, the first city on the other side of the French border from Spain. We were coming from Spain. And something on the – we knew there was a train strike, and the screen said something like, train strike is affecting service to Cerbère. So we're on the train, and we're like, okay, well, whatever. And then we get to Port-Bou, which is the last city on the Spanish side of the border, and the train just stops. And I'm like, yeah, we're not going to Cerbère, so – okay. So
all right,
we got off the train in this little border coastal town with a little tiny port and a little tiny beach and all these cute little bars. And it was actually a very fun little town we stayed overnight in. Lonely Planet called it a depressing town, but we thought it was fun.
We had
a good restaurant. There was this great gay bar. The World Cup. Spain was playing in the World Cup that night.
Ooh, so that's a good night to be out.
Yeah, yes. Although they lost, so people were kind of depressed.
That was sad.
But then we had to bike over the border into Cerbère, and it was this huge hill. I mean, kind of like West Hills, larger hill, and it's very windy. Avant violent is what the sign said.
Okay.
It was like 50-mile-an-hour winds kind of constantly streaming. But it felt very Sound of Music. We're going up this hill on our little Bromptons, you know, spinning the wheels, and there's crazy wind, and we're like, we have to get over the border. We have no other way to get there. There's no bus, no taxi, no train. We're stuck.
But you're just pushing on. You're persevering like the adventurers that you are.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Exactly, uh-huh. Yeah. Taking pictures at the top where the border was quite rather difficult because it was hard to just stay standing in that wind.
Oh, just from the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
Now, did you guys have trouble like crossing into like on your bikes, like crossing the border at all?
No, there's an old border guard station where presumably before the EU you would have to show your passport or whatever, but because of the EU it's all boarded up and covered over in graffiti and you just ride right by.
Okay.
And actually, the coast there looked a lot like the California, Northern California coast, like rolling grassy hills, vineyards, beautiful blue ocean, and beautiful winding roads, very windy.
I really love that kind of land. Like that's, I mean, that's what we rode through, Aaron, you and I, and
the Big
Adele.
Sur trip.
Last spring. And that's really one of the nicest places you could ride is near water and near beautiful, you know, dramatic cliffs. So,
That's fantastic. 15th century graveyards and
all that stuff.
Vineyards. Yeah.
It's just that you have to go up hills to get those big views. I mean, that, you know.
That is the downside.
Right. And the Brompton is pretty good, but it's not really a little mountain goat of a bike. You know, it's like you only get six gears. And
right.
And Todd, our friends, Farner, don't listen to this show.
Well, yeah, I was going to say our friends Russ and Laura with the Pathless Pedal, they've really put Bromptons through the paces, but it does take some modification. And they're not necessarily built for that. So
We were actually talking to Russ about that after we came back, and he was describing the modification that he did to, you know, get a lower gear.
Oh, yeah.
Putting a smaller chainring on the front. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I think my favorite part about their setup was that at one point that you can't get a derailleur for the Brompton for the front, but you can change the gears with a stick. So if you carry a stick along with you, then you have like two chainrings in front.
Just kind of move it along.
Yeah, exactly.
As you pedal, yeah.
So that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But aside from bicycling, did you guys have a favorite mode or a favorite leg of the trip? Like a train ride that was particularly memorable or other?
Yes.
What was it like?
I don't know what he's talking about.
I wanted to leave as much space after that as possible.
I'm just remembering the bullet train that we missed. I still have yet to take a bullet train. We'd bought tickets for this bullet train and
you
we missed it by
a bullet
one.
Train?
We dodged a bullet train. But we didn't know when we got there.
Guys.
They're kind of like airplanes. Like they have a giant metal detector, like at the airport.
Oh.
And you have to go through a metal detector because they've had bombings and
heavy
whatnot.
Security.
So you have to go through metal detector and all that. And then there's these ladies dressed like stewardesses, like with the little hats and matching pantsuits. And they check your ticket to get on the bullet train. And because of that, we missed the train by a minute. So,
oh, man.
Yeah.
It's kind of like going to the airport in the U.S.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So, was it problematic to get the next one? I guess it's not the same like at an airport where like you miss your flight. Like,
well, we lost the money. So, I mean, we were trying to go to France from Barcelona. And as you know, there's like five or six trains a day, but some of them are the local ones that stop at every little town. So those take an hour or two longer. And the bullet train is like every 6 hours or whatever.
Okay.
So.
So it's really fast, but if you miss it, it's gone.
Yeah.
But I have to say my favorite mode was we made our way to Marseille and we had like 3 hours there, which is sad because Marseille seemed great. I mean, it seemed like the most diverse city that we saw and, you know, just very densely urban and, of course, lots of history and all that. But we were getting on a ferry to Corsica and that was great because we – had gotten the tickets online. Esther had found them, but then we had to figure out how to check in and we were a little confused and we were waiting outside the office for them to open and these other people came up and they – I can't remember if they asked us in French, if we spoke French and we were kind of like, no, not really. We speak English. And they were like, we don't really speak English.
Their primary language is Arabic.
Right. And so then I think Esther said, well, he speaks Spanish. And so we talked to each other in Spanish. But we got on the ferry, lovely ride. They had a bar on there that was so great, and it played the soccer game.
The World Cup.
Nice.
And then they had this little room. It's kind of an odd thing because you could get a sleeping room on the ferry, but it was an extra 50 euros or something like that. And we were pretty cheap. And so they had just a room that was filled with like airline seats, but it kind of looked like you were in a movie theater. You know, they were all facing a wall.
Right.
And about the size of a really small movie theater. But no movie, just a wall. And that's where you like slept.
Okay.
But we actually found a little space of floor between some of the seats and we just rolled out our mattresses. And that was lovely. And we woke up in the morning. We took another ferry from Corsica to Italy and it was like a cattle car.
Oh, really?
It was like everybody.
Standing room only?
Corsica ferries.
Yeah. We were at the very head of the line. That's the great thing about being on a bike. You know, there was like a line of cars and buses like the length of Nebraska.
Oh, yeah.
Suckers.
Leading up to the ferry. And we were at the very front. And as soon as they opened up the gate, everybody runs. And we're like, we're at the front. What do we care? And we like saunter on and we secure
our
bikes.
There's a lot of German people, it seemed like. There's all these blonde people.
Germans like to vacation over there.
Yeah.
And so then once we got on there, secured our bikes and got up into the cabin, we figured out why. It's like there was no assigned seating. It's like any space that was flat, you would try to grab so you could sleep on it.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And how long of a trip is this?
That's overnight.
Okay. So enough time that you want a place to kind of sleep or something.
Yeah.
It's a red eye, basically.
Yeah. You would just be really burnt out if you sat up. And you couldn't sit up because there wasn't really any place to sit unless you like got in there and like elbowed your way into it, because everybody's taking every deck chair possible and adding another one and laying out in it. And, you know, families like creating little compounds with their blankets and stuff. I mean, it's, you know, in retrospect, it's all very amusing. But at the time, we were like, where's our place to sleep?
Right.
Yeah.
And why not? Why don't we get to sleep like they do? Where's our blanket fort?
Yeah. Well, it was just surprising because the other one was like so easy. So it's like, we could sleep in this chair or not.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say that was a memorable moment was when our friends who were in Uzès, this little tiny French town, it's kind of like Tony in a nice touristy Tony way.
And it's a UNESCO cultural site.
It is. Our friend had rented a house there, you know, a 1,000-year-old house for a month, and she was staying there and having people visit all month. So we're like, we'll meet you. And they're like, we're going to the, what is the name of the bridge?
The Pont du Gard.
It's this ancient Roman bridge across the river by the town. And they're like, meet us there. We're going there today. So we rode across this ancient Roman bridge in this national park and met them on the other side of the bridge to go stay at their 1,000-year-old thing. It was this great moment.
That was lovely.
Yeah, biking through this basically French national park.
Yeah, you're just immersed in tourism. Or, well, I was going to say in tourism and history, I guess. Maybe not so much in tourism.
Well, there was plenty of tourism, too, because when you get up there, they've got an ice cream shop and they've got, like, you know, all the things that you can buy. So they've got that figured out, too.
Right. But to be able to say that, like, I was there and I moved myself under my own power over this this amazingly old thing.
Yeah. An aqueduct, actually.
Yeah.
It was their water system.
Yeah. Yeah. Fluorided or not?
Probably had naturally occurring levels.
Okay.
I'm guessing.
Probably higher than 0.03 parts per million. Just saying.
They all seem to have dazzling smiles, those
guys. Right. Definitely.
It's all the wine.
And you referenced being able to speak Spanish. How many languages do the two of you speak together?
There's a lot of fractions in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. How many languages are useful to you?
English and Spanish are the main ones.
Yeah. Esperanto in a pinch.
And I studied French in high school, and it served me really poorly when we were in France.
Okay. So what was your – because the thing I've heard from people who travel to France is that no one wants you to speak French to them because you'll sully the language as you try to, you know, push it across your tongue. Mm. Was that the experience you had, or is that a stereotype?
I think they liked it if you spoke correct French.
Okay.
I was corrected a few times. I like the way they correct you. They're like, no. I walked into a what do you call it, boulangère, and I was like, I want the tarte du framboise. And she's like, no, framboise. Voila. And she hands it to me.
Yeah. Yes, she was very clear.
Yeah.
Which I like. You know, if I'm getting it wrong, tell me. I'll learn.
Sure. So. Yeah. Yeah. See, that was the thing. When I was in Germany, I was made fun of by someone, some shop. I was buying beer. Because in Germany, you can drink beer as you walk down the street because it's considered a food, which I love. But I was trying.
Get those vitamins.
That's your favorite food, isn't it?
Oh, man. If beer was a food, it would be my favorite food. And in Germany, it is. But the problem was I was trying to use German to ask if she spoke English. And I think she made fun of some like pronunciation thing that one of my diphthongs was wrong. And so she made fun of me. And that was enough for me to be like, wow, I just can't do it. I'll just speak like a dumb American because that's what I've got. So, okay. But that was not a disappointment for you. You did okay with that.
No, I let him do the talking. So.
Okay.
It was kind of tricky. I mean, like we started in Spain where I'm pretty comfortable in Spanish and Esther speaks some Spanish.
Although they primarily speak Catalan in Barcelona in that part of Spain.
Right.
So.
That was a little tricky. And then we get to France where I speak a little bit of French. Then we get to Italy where neither of us speaks anything, and it's just like we got less and less communicative the farther we went.
Yeah, right. I studied Latin for 6 years, so I was better at translating the ancient Roman on the sides than the modern day Italian. So
yeah.
That came in handy.
Yeah,
nice.
For the tourist stuff. Were you correcting like the tour guides then? No, actually, well, this one here says
I was a little bit mad. The place where Caesar was assassinated now is this giant. Because basically Rome is on top of three layers of history. So
you got the Rome underground tour, and then you got the Rome underground tour.
Well, there's this big open square, kind of like if Pioneer Square was an underground parking garage that was excavated. And there's all these cats that live in it. It's this cat refuge.
Oh, nice.
And they're wandering around all these like moldy, grassy columns that are all overgrown. And that's actually where Caesar was assassinated. But there's just this little sign that's all, you know, messed up and graffitied over. And it's not even in the tour book. In the tour book, it's like, oh, here's this great place where all these cats live. It's a cat refuge. And you can watch the volunteers feed the cats.
They don't mention that, like, Caesar.
And they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, Caesar was assassinated.
Thus ending, you know, Rome as a republic.
Yeah.
And creating, you know, a Shakespearean masterpiece.
That's it.
Right.
Et tu, Brute?
Yeah.
I wondered if that was going to come out.
I felt like it was my duty.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was doing all I could not to say that.
But the cats were really cute, to their credit. So
they were.
We got to pet some of them.
Yeah, actually, there was a sign saying you could take some home.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I thought was interesting because it seemed like it was mostly frequented by tourists from other countries.
So please, maybe, export our cats.
Yeah.
It's probably easier to take cats through the EU, you know, now that they've taken care of the border problems.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, my cat ranges around, but those cats were Roman.
That's right. Well, maybe before we wrap our show and do some news, do we have news? We have some mail.
We have mail.
Hey, we've got mail. I was going to ask you guys.
That's my favorite part of the show, actually.
No.
Yes. Hey, well, you've got mail. Maybe you guys will let me sing it for the mailbag this time.
Please do.
Yeah.
I would like for somebody else to sing that for a couple of
just going to say, you're in charge of this Smart Trips program, right? Or you work with it.
I am intricately involved in the cogs of the Smart Trip program.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. You work with the Portland Bureau of Transportation.
It's true.
And we appreciate that. Thank you for helping us make a greater city, a better city.
Thank you all for being a great city.
Yeah. And because I just moved, I think my housemate got a Smart Trips flyer from the Bureau of Transportation.
Yes, so. Welcome Smart Trips. That's our big program this year.
Right. You want to just give a short breakdown of that?
Sure. Well, Smart Trips is basically what we call an individualized marketing program. So we pick a target group of people and offer all of them great stuff about transportation, you know, like bike maps and transit information and walking booklets, et cetera, et cetera. And the people who respond to it, those are the folks we pay attention to. So in the past, we've done it in a geographic area like part of Southeast Portland or part of Northeast Portland. This year, it's to anybody who's moved in Portland, whether they've moved to Portland from elsewhere or moved within Portland.
That's us.
And the idea is you move to a new neighborhood, you got to figure out how are you going to get to the library? How are you going to get to the park? How are you going to get to work? You know, and if you get the information on how you might do that either by walking or biking or taking transit, maybe you'll make that your habit rather than jumping in a car, because once that habit is established, it takes a lot more work to undo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the Smart Trips Welcome Program has been very neat that way, because I hear from a lot of people who say, oh, yeah, I moved and then I got this thing in the mail and I filled out the order form and then somebody came and showed up on a bike and gave me this bag full of stuff and I was so happy.
That makes sense. Like when you move, I mean, it's much easier to kind of, even if you were, you know, in the habit of driving everywhere, you move to a new place, somebody can show you, oh, well, you can get to this place by bike, or, you know, you're just walking distance from here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You're already kind of open to changing things up.
Tabula rasa.
Yeah.
Thank you. The Romans might have said.
That's Latin, right?
That is.
Mm-hmm. Is that Latin, huh?
Yep.
Okay.
So I love that anyway. That's the sort of thing that happens here in Portland. And if you like that idea and it doesn't happen in your town, you might be able to be part of that solution. So mm-hmm. Our call to action, go out and do something.
And maybe find some place where you can serve breakfast once a month to encourage other people to, you know,
to bike there.
Or start a Sunday Parkways. Open Streets event?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Or help someone move by bike.
Should we talk a little bit about Sunday Parkways? They're done now.
That's something that you do, right, Esther?
Yep. I'm employed very, very part-time by Axiom Event Productions, who contracts with the city to make Sunday Parkways happen 5 times a year.
Yeah.
So far.
And we appreciate that as well. And that was actually where I first met you, I think, because we had a huge super trailer.
Oh.
And you had the band with ukuleles, and you were like, hey, these two might work together. I don't think we ever actually set anything up. But
I was working at East Portland Parkways.
Yes, yeah, and you were like the closest, you were the closest volunteer to my house. And so I think that was that was why, Anyways, that was awesome. So thank you for working with that.
It's super fun.
Yeah. How was this season overall?
The season seemed very good. I got to work. I took Northeast off because that's our neighborhood, and I like to go out and have fun at that one.
You've been
I
there
worked
enough.
At Southeast, which is so easy because everyone's really used to having bikes on their street and the street closure and or opening, should I say. And I worked at Southwest, which was only the second time it was done in Southwest, so that was really fun and interesting.
And that's kind of the hillier part, the lumpier part of Portland.
It is, and they had most people don't know this, they had a separate walk route that was different from the main route.
I wasn't even aware of this.
It was an additional portion.
For the purpose
just for
of, like, there's so the bikes coming down the hill don't, like,
no, because there's a Southwest Trails network, and it's kind of like the Neighborhood Greenways network. Like, some of it's on street, but then other parts connect that go upstairs and are dirt trails.
Oh, yeah. That area has lots of stairs.
Yeah, they kind of wind all over, and some of them are really great connecting routes, and the Neighborhood Association really wants people to know about those routes so they can walk. So there was, in some places, a parallel route to the Parkways route that was this back way that was not possible to bike, unless maybe you have like a ECR or Surly ECR.
But then it would probably be frowned upon at the event just because there's a lot of pedestrians out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't mix well traditionally.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of pedestrians were out enjoying that route. So
that's very cool. I oftentimes have thought, like, oh, I need to go out to Southwest and just, like, walk around the hills. I've done that once or twice. But the most famous, probably the most accessible one is the 4T trail.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Which is I forget what the 4Ts are. Is it the
could tell you.
Trolley, train, and trail.
There we
Sorry.
Go.
Very good.
All right.
I stole your thunder.
No, you did so well.
That's the 4TRs, actually, because they all start with T.
Good point.
I think. So anyways, that one's cool because it's a multimodal adventure that takes you all over Southwest Portland, and you get to see a lot of cool things.
Yeah.
Yep.
And if someone is in Portland and wants to check out some of these, you can get the Southwest Portland Neighborhood Bike and Walk map, and it shows where the Southwest trails are.
Ah, yes.
And so you can – and it even shows the 4T trail in a special
– panel?
Special
– inset?
No, it's a special symbol.
Oh, it has like its own its own demarcation.
Yes, exactly.
Nice.
And you can order those from Portland Bureau of Transportation.
Nice. Yep.
That's the other thing I do for my job is work on those maps.
Fabulous. Well, you two are very inspiring people. We appreciate it. Will you join us for our mail segment?
I would be honored.
Excellent. Oh, were there other web addresses? Any other places people should go on the internet?
Well, if you wanted to order one of those
cats
maps.
Cats of Instagram. Instagram.com/cats of Instagram.
Maybe narrow down. Concerning YouTube.
That's it.
There's those places we're trying to get shut down that keep, you know, the honkytonkprison.com.
Oh.
Yes.
But you can go to portlandoregon.gov/transportation/AT and you'll find all the
or gettingaroundportland.org.
Org.
Not .com, .org.
Yes, gettingaroundportland.org. We don't actually advertise that anymore, but it is still.
It still works. Okay.
It's easier.
You can get your maps. You can find out when Sunday Parkways is. And you can see the calendar listings for the Portland Bicycle Rides, which I also lead. And we have one coming up on November 15th, the Coffee and Donuts Ride.
Oh, my. This is a city-sponsored city exploration event.
City-sponsored ride. We show off the great bikeways of the city, and in fact, we'll be showing off some new ones.
Okay.
Mysteriously, that's also Carl Larson's birthday. So
oh, hey, now.
If you're out there listening, happy birthday, Carl.
That's right.
Yeah, tell him if you don't know what to get him for his birthday, come along on the ride. We can pick up donuts for him.
Perfect. There you go. Perfect. There you go. That'd be thematic.
Yeah.
All right. You know what it's time for?
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
There we go.
I thought you were going to let Timo do that.
That's true.
If we had not had all these technical mishaps, we totally would have let you do that.
Hey, we got mail.
Who was it? It was Pedal Power Talk Show. We had them on. We tried to get them to sing along.
And they did.
Oh,
they
did.
It took us three takes to get it done.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a tough one. Surprisingly tough.
Yeah.
It's all in the timing.
No one else can match my musical genius of... Never mind. Hey,
no,
Zoe is our newest monthly supporter and also a vocal one.
Hurrah. Thanks. She's the one that shouted at me as she was on her way to the Timbers game.
Hey.
I was downtown. She was downtown. I was like, who's that? And then it was too late.
Oh, so she's not just a vocal supporter. She's also an athletic supporter?
Supports
no!
athletics.
Welcome to my life, Aaron.
Isn't that the definition of the Timbers Army?
I suppose so. So, yes, thank you, Zoe, for doing that. Yeah. Also, Johnny K, been donating forever.
Forever, and never made it into our credits.
That's all my fault, so my apologies.
Johnny, thank you so much, and you still continue to write in.
Yeah,
never mentioned it.
That's the problem. Johnny K, that's your fault. It's not. It's not. That's terrible. I'm just glad that we caught it.
Got a beverage here, man.
Yeah, seriously.
You guys don't do supporter gifts like mugs or Carl Castle's autobiography or anything like that?
We've been doing various things.
Okay.
Right now, if you support us at the $5 level, I give you a phone call and and we mail you some stickers.
Or he passes.
What does it take to get naked photos?
Naked photos. It depends.
You ain't got the money for that, dear.
Are these for distribution or just like my special gift to you? Because if...
Well, let me ask it this way. What does it take to prevent sending naked photos?
There you go.
I suppose that's just the threshold of like, you know, a certain amount of donation. Like that's a good question. If somebody wanted a naked photo of me, what would it be? Would it be like 200, 500 bucks like per month?
Oh my gosh, you're selling yourself
sustaining
so
member.
Short.
I'd call that member sustaining.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, it could be a video postcard that says, hey, you got mail parts.
That's the kind of member sustaining I don't really care about taking care of. All that to say, if you support us at just $2 a month, we'll mail you some stickers. And at $20 a month, which certain donors have opted for, we'll send you a Portlandy gift package. So we've sent out one of those already. Another one is going to be on its way. So anyways, those are things. And if there's something you want us to do, like if you want naked photos of me, you know, suggest an amount, we'll negotiate and we'll set something up. The nice thing is we're so close to breaking even on our bills. We're almost there.
Oh, ooh. No kidding.
And the next goal that I've set for us is if we can continue to accrue monthly supporters, then we can actually get more equipment like microphones that I own, because none of these I own right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a backup recorder so that we don't lose the audio gold that sometimes
that
we have in the past.
Right now,
fingers crossed and stuff. Knock on podcast walls. Anyways, just to know that, yeah, we really appreciate anyone who comes along beside us. And again, we have never yet to date in 4 years sold advertisements for anybody. Anytime we say something, we mean it. And that's valuable to us, so we hope it's valuable to you.
I think we should do something really special for the person who, like, brings us over that threshold of breaking even.
Oh, yeah? Oops.
Yeah, I don't know what it would be.
Naked and pictures of me.
You're going to have to hire a photographer for that one.
Right.
Hey, Chris and Chico.
Yeah. Oh, right. By the way, Chris is also he's a new donor that I gave him a phone call. So.
Oh, good.
And he hooked me up with possibly a guy.
By the way, purple and orange, your phone call is coming. I promise you.
It's on the way. Yeah. So, Chris says.
Last Saturday, there was a car-free day at Lassen Volcanic National Park, which was totally kick-ass.
Totally.
Wow.
32 miles with 3,000 feet of climbing and 3,000 feet of ripping downhills was blissful. The ride back over the peak was an ass-kicker, though for a total of 6,000 feet of climbing over 54 miles in one day, I was spent.
And deservedly so.
But the fun part was seeing someone who invited me to an event this Saturday. I'll be going to an event called Meet Your Maker, put on by Paul Components in Chico, where they're getting five-frame builders to come face-to-face with bike fanatics here to go for a leisurely ride and post-ride barbecue and beers. With how many custom frame builders there are in Oregon, I'm surprised I never stumbled upon something like it while I was living in Portland. Shame.
Obviously, he didn't say that. That's
those are my words.
Right,
those are my words. Granted, it was during the wet months. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely places where you can get together with frame builders and have beers.
Generally, there are places that serve beer.
Right, yeah. Right. Velocult used to have the frame building studio. I don't know that there are still frame builders using that space right now.
I don't know.
But I would imagine if you take any bike component and toss it in any direction, you might hit
a frame builder drinking a beer.
We should share. Dan Christensen shared this photo of a man's recumbent bike inflatable raft combo. The website Adventures of Greg is a human-powered adventure log. And I thought maybe this is just like kind of like a goof, like a one-off sort of thing. But this guy actually has a bunch of kind of kinetic motion machines that he's put together.
Oh, really?
And I haven't dug into the blog yet, but it's a super cool, website. That, he does a lot of cool
intriguing.
Things.
That's an impressive photo, I have to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, definitely. Did you see this, Esther?
Wow.
Yeah, it's got the kind of the pontoon raft with a recumbent bike on top of it, which is awesome. So
he still has the light. And the fender to the front wheel attached to the
yeah.
It's all he did was he just took that front wheel off and then mounted it onto the pontoons and whatever attachment
right.
was on there.
And I'm assuming that's like some sort of paddle that steers him or something.
Yeah.
So anyways, I have always wanted to do more human-powered water things. So
yeah,
maybe this will be the year.
There was it this this year or 2 years ago, their Pedalpalooza was like a raft across.
Oh,
I think it happened both this year and last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
I know it happened 2 years ago. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that was Ryan Hashigan's invention, if
okay.
I'm not mistaken.
Nice.
Perhaps there were a cabal, but I remember his name being connected there.
A cabal of pedal powered water machines.
Yes.
Chunk 666 has always had the aqua choppers.
Oh,
going
okay.
To, they do Ross Island campouts and
right.
stuff like that.
Do you guys know any of them personally?
Yeah.
Okay.
We would love to get
We'll have to talk later. Yeah. Yeah. And then Dan
Lastly,
in Minnesota.
Dan, yeah. His rain gear, he tweeted to us.
Yes.
Was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I just thought he looked
Very
like Humphrey Bogart, basically.
Yes.
Wow.
Got this big old overcoat.
Oh,
pretty fantastic.
So he's
dapper.
Going with the yeah. traditional wool.
He is. Yep. Yep. He is. So.
Also rides a Surly Disc Trucker.
Yeah.
Oh.
2014 version.
Oh, nice.
Does Sean Granton know he exists?
Possibly.
You know, I imagine if the two got together, the universe might implode.
It's very possible that would be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, is it a good time to wrap up our show?
Let's wrap it.
Do you want me to do the credits in Garrison Keillor's voice?
Yes, please.
Yeah. Okay. There we go.
Well, let's see. Let's see how this goes.
Surely we want you to.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Twitter's at Sprocket Podcast. Phone in or SMS 503-847-9774. Our music is by Ryan J. Lane. Thanks to our sustaining donors for supporting our show costs. Logan Smith, Johnny K., Shadowfoot, Katharina Melumgard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, Cameron Lean, Richard Wasensky, Tim Mooney, Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly, Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen, Miller, Todd Parker, Scott McAllister, Morgan, Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhardt, and Zoe Campagna. Thank you all, and see you soon.
Brush your teeth.
Do good work.
Go to bed.
Good night.
I think I need one of those sliders.
You're going to need more than that before I'm done.
As you hope.
That one popped open from the sheer force of my foot.
I was just going to say redemption is near, too, because of the bottles.
Very good.
Oh.
Love
Timo,
it.
You have met your match.
Oh, not necessarily. I think Timo will always outmatch me when it comes to making puns. I think you're a master.
Which... you know, doesn't really get you a lot in the larger universe. It's not like, you know, getting to the highest point of Ms. Pac-Man, you know, where you actually get some respect or something.
Right, right. Are we rolling again?
Yeah, we've been rolling this whole time.
Great.
We've been rolling, and so were those cider bottles after Esther kicked them across the floor.
A production of Open Roads Broadcasting.